Whew. It's just a glorious time of the year, isn't it? I'm out doing my parks again. The lammies are ooting and growing, and the birds are on the shrubs. And it wouldn't be long before the leaves are out. I was just watching a young buzzard swooping on something. I realised there was a feral cat going across the park. And obviously the buzzard wasn't just half a happy about that competition. But it's sunny. And I wouldn't just say it's warm, but it's near as calm as it's been. And I'm standing at the centre of it was a Pictish settlement. I think I mentioned that before. And I kind of was a Pictish settlement because I was sent aerial photos and I could see the pole marks in the photos. And it's Ida's bit that gets the first sun in the morning. Oh, they kind of put big in hooses. I'm using the heat through the sun to good effect. To think, have we learned anything? It seems a long time to use solar energy, but they kind of put it. But ah, it is bonny out here. And I would like to think about art and nature and bonny music that I've just been enjoying at the great Far North retreats. That was the gathering I was at up between Tain and Neg, aside the Cromarty Firth. More about that in our next episode. But right now I would like to immerse myself in the tunes and the superb musicianship I heard then. But it's not that easy when I'm looking at a hunter mole or moudy heaps in my park. Fit the vadee about the moudy. It's a big decision. I'm off a fond of the wee craters. But for now, I'm going to think about what we're going to be featuring in this episode. And as I walk back, I will immerse myself, and you, if you accept my invitation, in the music of Ross Ainslie and Tim Edie. Ross was our superb chef at the Far North Gathering, and fit an amazing chef he is, as well as an amazing piper. So, as we walk up the park, let us enjoy the music. This is a track for Ross and Tim's album, Dyad. This is their selection of hornpipes and jigs. Come on with me, up the park. If I can find the dog, find the dog. Babs, bye. Come back. just great. Ross Ainslie and Timmy D from their album Dyad, and a selection of hornpipes to get us dancing. That's certainly got us dancing. And I'm still Frieda Morrison. I'm delighted to welcome you again to join us in another journey with Scots Radio into some of the working world over heritage, the language, the lore, the music, the muse, and the folk that mak it. In this episode, we hear about the New Writers Awards, speaking to Scottish Book Trust Director of Programmes, Rosemary Ward, and Ross Crawford about his award. Ross was the Scots Language Awardee last year. Then our Dave Mitchell has been delving deep and diligent into the history of medicine and herbal medicine in Scotland. And that inspired me to join medical herbalist Natasha Lloyd out in the forage and hear more about her new book. It's all happening in this programme. The music is real. So let me introduce the lads of legend. In his B&B studio in Edinburgh, guiding us through the waves, hello, Mr. Richard Werner. Hello, Richie.
Oh, well, hello there. How's it going?
Oh, just fine. Did you like that intro?
Do you know what? I loved it. So can I get this right? Have you got the remnants of a Pictish settlement on your lands?
Aye. Him.
That is just mind-blowing. I'm stunned by that. I think that's brilliant, you know?
Now, when I say settlement, it's when somebody goes up, like the Aberdeenshire archivist went up and took photographs of different parks at a certain time of year,
aye,
and you can see where the holes were for the poles for the huts in different areas.
I think that's amazing.
So we have got that photograph, and I am so proud of that. That is far, as I said, that almost hits the sun. They can't flat to build their huts.
Isn't that amazing? And listen, you talked about a buzzard as well, right? I saw something amazing just last Sunday there. I took the bairns up to the zoo, right? And it's amazing, you see all the animals in the zoo, blah, blah, blah. But in the background, I could hear this like, burp, burp. And I'm like, oh, what's that? That's a woodpecker. I've never seen a woodpecker before. And it took ages and ages. I observed, I watched. And right enough, there it was, right at the highest branch of this tree I was right under. And it's a tiny wee thing. But what a noise it was making. It was absolutely amazing. So I finally seen a woodpecker.
I love the sound of that. Just absolutely
great. Isn't it brilliant?
Did you been your travels in foreign climes, haven't you?
I have, yeah. Do you know, just last month there, we were just away for a week, but we went for a wee family holiday to the beautiful island of Gran Canaria. So, and that was just a treat. I love it there. I love the flora and the fauna, and just immersing ourselves in a wee bit of sunshine as well. So,
and speaking of flora and fauna, we have David Mitchell, a past curator of Edinburgh Botanics and new deputy chair of the National Trust for Scotland, sitting there waiting to be introduced. Dave, you're there in the Edinburgh suburbs. Hello, come in.
I'm not. I'm sitting here enjoying the sun and watching the daffies dancing in the breeze.
Oh, Bonnie, fluttering and dancing. Right, before we speak about your focus this month, has spring sprung with you and your garden?
Oh, Mechty, it's come on with an offer speed this week. Things are coming into growth. There's magnolias and fleur, and I've been awful busy out and about. I had a few things today. I was out there, I had to get the last of my roses print and the sweet peas potted up and hardened off and the tips of them pinched, and there's a big container they gone into. I got that re-soiled and mere manure in the bottom of it, and then I had dogwoods and willows to prune, so they produce lots of new growth for next year's spring. And this weekend I'm repotting my lilies and weeding borders and mulching with compost. Oh, lots to do. Big long
lots
list.
To do. Ah, lovely. Now, you have been in your glory researching your focus for this episode. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, hey, that's it. You know, I've been looking back at a subject that's been close to my heart for a long time. It's about the use of plants in medicine. And today we're going to be like a stone skimming the surface of a long loch. We're going to be looking at the rich history behind plants and healing and medicine in Scotland. And that's a story that involves traditional healers and the ways of the wildwood, the Romans, the kings, monks, clansmen, doctors, physicians, and the Enlightenment. Oh, man, it's a really exciting story. You'll love it.
I'm looking forward to that. I love that vision or that kind of picture you did. It's that stone skimming the water to a long loch. Yeah. I love that one. That's a good one.
Well, we're just touching wee bits of it that make it sing noon again, to get folk curious.
Right, this, with music as well. Music as well! This is the Animasi's album, Cag 2 Down. This is 100 Days. Anna Massey with 100 Days for her album Two Down. It's just an amazing album. You're listening to Scots Radio. I'm Frieda Morrison, and with me is Richie Werner in the Wheelhouse and Dave Mitchell. Well, I had the pleasure of joining the gathering at the Traverse Theatre recently, a guest of the Scottish Book Trust, to celebrate the new Writers Awards and enjoy a showcase featuring the chosen writers for 2024. Since 2009, the awards have championed a group of emerging writers and helped them take their writing to the next level. It's great. It was a great showcase, and presented on stage by poet and writer Shane Strachan and Rosemary Ward. Rosemary is the director of programmes at the Scottish Book Trust, and she set the scene for what was about to happen in the theatre.
Well, tonight is one of our flagship events. It's the New Writers Showcase. We run a programme, an annual programme, whereby we select 9 recipients. They basically get an award if they're selected as a new writer. They receive a bursary to help them, you know, find the time to get on with their writing. They have the option of having a mentor to support them and to help them with their craft. They also get a whole variety of different kind of training and workshops, industry labs where they may be learning about marketing and about promoting their work and about how to project their voice and actually perform. So it's a brilliant, brilliant year-long programme that affords them time and the expertise, the industry expertise, to help them to really begin to hone their craft and to move from being this kind of emerging writer to being a fully fledged published writer. Tonight is all about us showcasing what they've been doing for the last year, what they've been working on. We've got a whole host of guests in the Traverse Theatre with us tonight, and the most important,
and thank you for the invite.
You're very welcome, Frieda. It's great to see you again. I suppose the most important invited guest tonight from the writer's perspective is we've got agents and publishers in the audience as well, in the hope that they're sitting there and they, you know, they pick up on some of the talent that they're about to see tonight.
And Scotland has a huge amount of talent. Writing is in our blood.
Massive amount of talent. And one of the other really, really exciting things about the New Writers Award is that for a number of years now, several years, Scottish Book Trust has worked in collaboration with the Gaelic Books Council, Cornel Eorican, and Cornel Eorican sponsor 2 Gaelic Awards. So as well as the 9 awardees that are funded through our Creative Scotland funding, Cornel Eorican come in and fund 2 additional ones, so that Gaelic features very, very heavily in what we're doing here. And just recently, in the last 2 years, we actually designated one of our awards, one of the 9 awards, for a Scots language writer. We were really desperate to promote and to encourage people to recognise that we really wanted Scots language writers to come forward and to participate.
And the presenter for the evening, of course, is one of our finest Scots language writers, Shane Strachan.
Shane Strachan's with us tonight, and we're delighted to have him. So, unfortunately for Shane, you know, he's going to have to share a stage with me, because I go up to introduce the Gaelic
awardees. I'm sure he'll be delighted about that.
But I'm sure he'll be extremely magnanimous and just sort of, you know, accepting his
he's
lot.
He's always magnanimous.
He's wonderful.
Listen, are there categories though?
Yes. On average, we can have anything up to 340, 360 applicants every year. So you can imagine demand hugely outweighs, you know, sort of the what we have available to us. But in terms, even if we just look at this year, 3 of the awardees are fiction writers, fiction and narrative non-fiction writers. 2 are specialising in poetry. 2 of the writers, the awardees tonight, are specialising in children and young adult writing. And there's also a spoken word writer as well, a spoken word performer.
Tyler is in that one.
Yes, yeah. And then our Scots language awardee this year is Ross Crawford from Ayrshire. So I've had a wee sneak preview at his sampler piece, and it is really, really good. And then our Gaelic awardees are Christina Nicholson and Ian Cumming. So it's just, you'll be blown away, Frieda. If this is the first time you've been at the showcase, you will be blown away by the real kind of vibe tonight. There's a real sort of a sense of anticipation,
expectation.
Yeah, it's great, and it's wonderful. We also have so many of our new writer alumni coming along as well, because people like Graham McRae Burnett. He was one of our new writer awardees many years ago. So you know, we've got writers, you know, who've gone through this process, and they still continue to support us at Scottish Book Trust and turn out for these things.
See, a lot of people are just, well, it's books. Books are books. It's not the spoken word, but the stories are the foundation of everything. without the stories, we can't do the films, we can't do the productions, we can't do anything else. It's the stories that we need.
Absolutely. And Scots language is no different from Gaelic, Frieda. It's that oral tradition, it's that oral, you know, sort of impetus that really sort of feeds this writing frenzy. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, let's face it, from the point of view of Gaelic, it's really only as we came into the 20th century, you know, that Gaelic really came into its own in terms of publication. So, and Scots, it's wonderful to see such an interest in Scots language writing now as well.
It's
where
bubbling,
before,
isn't it? It's growing. Every year I see it growing, and the confidence is growing. That is the foundation again to the spoken language.
It's this acceptance that it's you know, for so long I think we've been told, oh, that's not proper.
Or
that's
hadn't done, as
you said. Yeah, absolutely. Batted back into boxes. And not anymore. You know, people are loud and proud and happy to be identified as a Scots language, you know, activist, writer.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, so it's great.
And it's a confidence, and all of a sudden people recognise the worth that it holds, that this is a treasure that we were born with.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, when I look around, you know, this is my sixth showcase now, and every year just seems to get bigger and better, you know, and you're blown away by the quality and the confidence, you know, because when you think about it, a lot of these new writers have never actually stood on a stage and performed. So by the time they go through their workshop and get the training in how to present their work, to see them tonight is just amazing, you know, in terms of their ability and their confidence. And I just think, you know, they're going to be the kind of bestsellers of tomorrow, you know. I always look so positively, because when you think of some of our previous alumni, you know, and how far they have come as well, I really am. It's one of the programmes that, you know, we're really, really most proud of at Scottish Book Trust.
Rosemary, thank you. As always, you just hit the nail on the head. And I'm so looking forward to this event tonight. I've been looking forward to it for a long, long time. And thank you for the invite again.
You're very welcome, Frieda. It's always lovely to host you.
Rosemary Ward, Director of Programme at the Scottish Book Trust. Lovely to see you again, Rosemary. And Ross Crawford was the awardee for Scots Language Writing in 2024, as you heard there. And he told me about his story focus.
So what I've been working on the last 5 years, but with a special focus in the last year, is a novel that looks at, I suppose, takes inspiration from my childhood growing up in Ayrshire, round about 1999 and the turn of the millennium, when I was just a wean 11-year-old, 12-year-old, cutting about, trying to find my way in the world, trying to get a sense of my own identity. And I decided I wanted to write this and get it out of my system during COVID, like many folk. And I live in Stirling now, so I felt awful disconnected from where I grew up. So I started to write and scrieve to really take myself back to my childhood and back to Ayrshire. So that's where it comes from, I suppose.
And is it a selection of stories connected to the childhood that you're remembering, or is it something from your memory banks that you want to get onto the page?
It's a really good question. I would say it started off as a series of like recollections from my childhood, and then I started to realise I could make this into a full novel. So that's what I've done. It's, you know, 80,000 words, manuscript, and it's set basically during one summer, the summer of the year 2000. So it is a full finished story as it is now.
And the book is called
The Big Hoose.
The Big Hoose. Published?
Not published yet. I'm hoping that through this programme, maybe I can pick up an agent or a publisher. Obviously, we're in a really good place with Scots language the new in terms of publishing, and there's so many good ambassadors out there. So I'm hoping there's going to be interest.
Why do you think that there is a good place now for Scots publishing? Wasn't I in that line, was it?
No. I think one aspect of that is there's that kind of thing that folk talk about, the Scottish cringe in general. I think some folk have had that pit on to them in terms of speaking their own language, speaking the Scots language. And I think now, as they've seen more and more good ambassadors, you know, the likes of Len Penny we were talking about, Shane Strachan that's here tonight, Billy Kay's been doing it for a good long while, I think slowly but surely folk are gaining confidence and starting to recognise that what they're speaking is a different language. It's not just slang. And I think there's still a long way to go, but we're in a good place now.
Ross, congratulations again.
Thank you very much.
Ross Crawford, awardee for Scots Language Writing. And our best wishes to the new awardees. And thank you for the company at the Travers. It was a great night. Really enjoyed catching up with everybody. And this is from my AIN archive. For a wee Kayleigh I had at the house. This is one of our finest traditional singers, Tom Spears from Aberdeenshire. We have a song about the wee village of Rhynie.
At Rhynie I sheared my first hairst, near to the fit a ben a he, and my maester was recht ill to sit. Aye, but laith was I to lose my fee. Lenten adi, turin adi, lenten adi, turin ae, lenten adi, turin adi, lenten adi, turin ae. Rhynie's work it's hell to work, and Rhynie's wages are but small. Aye, and Rhynie's laws are double strict. Aye, and that fit grieves me most of all. Lenten adi, turin adi, lenten adi, turin ae, lenten adi, turin adi, lenten adi, turin ae. Rhynie, it's a cauld clay hole, it's nothing like my feather's tune. I and Rhynie's sick, a hungry place, it doesn't suit a lowland loon. Lenten adi, turin adi, lenten adi, turin ae, lenten adi, turin adi, lenten adi, turin ae. But I he rocht and I he focht, and I he won my penny fee. I and dogging back the gate I come, and a better bairnie I will be. Lenten adi, turin adi, lenten adi, turin ae, lenten adi, turin adi, lenten adi, turin ae.
Tom Spears with the song Rhynie. Great traditional song with that. And just as Dave, you were saying there, fit a voice, fit an honesty, fit a just an enjoyment of sheer singing that is, isn't it?
There's just a depth of the hame about it. And Aye. You can't put that in an album. You can only put it in a room.
Mm-hmm. Well, Guinness, that was a great gathering. Aye, speaking about gatherings. And Dave Mitchell, you've been delving again. And deep delving, not just in your garden, but into the history of one of our greatest inheritance, medicine. Now, I'll say no more, because I have never heard Mr. Mitchell say enthused about a subject. Well, he's aye enthused. Richie, he's aye enthused.
Oh, aye.
He's enthused. But this seems different. Mr. Mitchell, of that ilk, the stage is yours. Tell us more about the history of medicine in Scotland. First off, what is the earliest evidence we hear about the use of plants for healing?
Well, Frida, it's a long tale. It started back 3,200 years ago to 2,500 years ago, and the first evidence comes from the Neolithic settlement in Scarabray in Orkney, where they found some dried puffballs that were later identified as Bostivia nigrescens. And inside that puffball, there's wee woolly fibres that have the ability to stop bleeding. They have a hemostatic quality. And that links, interestingly, to Oatsy the Iceman. Ken Farr was found in the Italian glacier all the years ago. His body was found there in the ice. And he was carrying birch polypore, which was thought to reduce fever and swelling. If we come forward in time to the Mesolithic, 8,000 to 4,000 BC, the Neolithic 4,200 BC and into the Bronze Age, all that period, the settlements there, we find pollen, charcoal, uncarbonized woods, seeds, even carbonized bulbs, all things that came from the wildwood that we know have healing abilities, plants like birch and crabapple, oak, ash and pine, that were all valued for their bark, their sap, their fruit, their tannins. And then there's other plants like elders and sloes that were rich in vitamins and minerals. And juniper. Juniper was an important source as an antiseptic. And then wee wildflowers, like skullcap, that was used as a sedative for fever. And then the dead nettle, Lamium purpureum, that was used to treat burns and cuts and sprains. There's other things. Everywhere you looked in the wildwood, in the ponds and lakes and puddles and stream sides, there was things like yellow flag iris and meadowsweet and bog bean that were made into tonics and coffees and teas, and they were used for flavouring wine and for dressing wounds. And yet, even things that we use today, bulbs like garlic or ransoms, it's garlic has a lot of healing properties, you know, now used for cooking. Sphagnum moss, now there's a querying. Sphagnum moss was used to stem bleeding and make wooden dressings right up to World War I and World War II. The list goes on. It includes things like seaweeds such as dulse and sugar kelp and rowan and hawthorn and heather. The wildwood was the pharmacy of its day.
That's just an amazing list. We're going to hear more about the plants, of course, Natasha Lloyd, later on. Dave, did the Romans impact on early medicine in Scotland?
They impacted on all things, but they did impact on medicine. Not only did they bring plants that had a really good flavour, that had medicinal qualities, things like coriander and dill, but the biggest thing that they brought was opium poppy, that was known for its soporific qualities. But here's a queer fact for you. Opium poppy seeds were found in the Iron Age Oak Bank Cranog in Loch Tay, which dates from 1,200 to 550 BC. Opium poppies were found in that Cranog, 1,200 to 550 BC. How did they get here through the Mediterranean at that time? You can fit? We'll never can.
Mefty. That's all I can say, mefty. So, fan were the first hospitals and other places for healing the sick built in Scotland, Dave?
Oh, you're digging new. Well, that goes back to King Malcolm III, or Malcolm Canmore, and his second wife, Margaret of Wessex, or Margaret Queen of Alba, 1070-93 was her reign. Together, they created a lot of religious centres and poorhouses and places that cared for the sick. She was an often enlightened and kind of pious woman. She held a lot of sway over her husband. She might even have created a hospital at South Queensferry between 1085 and 1093. And if that was true, that would be before the foundation of St Leonard's Hospital in St Andrews that was founded in 1144. It was attached to a traveller's inn. And at the moment, it's generally thought to be the first purpose-built hospital in Scotland.
Uh-huh.
You know, Margaret was actually canonised. She became Scotland's only royal saint. And she was the mother of King David I. That's 1124 to 1153 was his reign. And he built over 20 abbeys and priories across the southwest and the east of Scotland. And they would have facilities for looking after the sick. They would have a medical herb garden. And they probably grew, I would think, a lot of the plants that were detailed in the Emperor Charlemagne's decree of 800 AD. It's a fascinating document. And it lists all the things that Charlemagne said. You have to grow these because they benefit communities. Yeah. That was the sort of foundation of managing the pharmacy. And King David, he began by building Holyrood Abbey in 1128, and then he built Kelso and Melrose and Jedburgh. And then he spread himself further afield, Dundrennan, Cambusnethan, Brechin, and even Old Deer away up in Aberdeenshire. Oh. And his work was followed by King Malcolm IV. And that was 1153 to 1165. And he built a lot of almshouses and poorhouses and leper hospitals. But perhaps the best known of all of these is a place called Sutra Isle Hospital in the Lammermuir Hills.
Sutra Isle, yeah, heard of this. Yeah.
Famous place. And it was the subject of a lot of archaeology. And it gave us a deep insight into the sort of plants that were being used at that time. Opium poppy, cloves, black henbane and hemlock. They were all part of that pharmacy at that time.
Hemlock. Hemlock was found there. Jeepers, Richie. Right, Fit happened after the Middle Ages. Fan did the scientific physic garden emerge?
Well, that's linked to the formation of the medical schools. The first medical school to be founded was the Bute Medical School in St Andrews in 1413. And then we have the incorporation of surgeons in Edinburgh in 1505, the Faculty of Physicians and Surgeons in Glasgow in 1599. And then we find a note of the Reverend Mark Jameson, Fawes Deputy Rector of Glasgow University, found in a physic garden in Glasgow in 1555. But the pivotal moment came when Sir Robert Sibbald and Andrew Balfour returned for their grand European tour, where they'd seen and learned a lot about how medicine was practised in Europe. And on their return, they founded the Royal Botanic Garden, Edinburgh, in 1670. And then, with the help of other folk, in 1681, they founded the Royal College of Physicians.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wonderful catalogue of plants from that time called Hortus Medicus Edinburghensis. It was the first of its kind, and it was written by James Sutherland, the intendant of the Physic Garden. And it showed then what they were growing. It's a great long list. We come to the Enlightenment then, and the foundation of the medical schools. Edinburgh University Medical School in 1726, Glasgow in 1755, Edinburgh in 1787. And these schools produced great minds, people like Dr. Joseph Black, who lectured on chemistry and physics to his students, Dr. William Cullen, who published a treatise called Materia Medica in 1789. Then there was the Hunter brothers, the anatomist William and the surgeon John. And then there was the Monroes, and there's a whole dynasty of the Monroes. You know, it's a fascinating subject, this, Frieda. And we shouldn't forget Dr. John Hope.
I was going to mention, what about John Hope?
Well, John Hope grew 3,000 different rhubarb plants in the Royal Botanic Garden, Edinburgh, for medical research. And then there was Dr. James Mousie from Dumfriesshire. He was physician to Catherine the Great. But if you want to find out more about all that, if our listeners gone back to episode 2 of the Grow Radio archive, they'll find that whole story there. It's really quite fascinating.
It's a great archive, that program. Right. Now, finally, are there any forgotten medical heroes for the time that you want to name at this point?
Oh, Frieda, I think that would have to be the Beatons or the Macbeth family, successive generations of hereditary doctors that served the clan chief, MacDonald, Lords of the Isles, then later, after the lordship was disbanded, the Macleans of Duart. They also served the crown. Originally from Ireland, they actually had trained in Europe at Louvain and Padua, and they served the Irish nobility, and they understood the teachings of Aristotle and Galen. And they moved from Ireland to Scotland, and they kind of divided themselves into two. There was a group in the Hebridean Islands and a group on the mainland. But amazingly, collectively, they served the Royal House of Scotland from the 14th century when Patrick Macbeath, or Beaton, served King Robert I. And they've continuously, down the generations, served the crown right through to the reign of James the sixth. By the 18th century, there were over 70 members had played their part. They operated throughout the islands. The Hebridean Beatons operated throughout the islands, in Skye and Call and Tyree and North and South Uist. But there was a family or a branch of the family at Pennycross, and that included Andrew Beaton, who founded a physic garden there probably sometime around, I would say 1600, 1630, in around then.
Right.
And then there was his son Malcolm. He wrote a lot of very important Gaelic manuscripts and books. And then Donald, Malcolm's eldest son. And then there was Dr. John Beaton. And Dr. John Beaton was very famous as a scholar and as a healer, and he was buried in Iona. And there's another branch of the Beaton family in the north end of the island, and they actually attended to Alexander Fraser of Lovett and the Stuarts of Appin, and they contributed more to these amazing Gaelic manuscripts called the Beaton Library. And these beaten manuscripts are today they're held in the National Library of Scotland, and they give a fascinating insight into the traditional treatments, the remedies, and I think more important than anything, the skills that were handed down and the observations that were handed down from one generation to the next. So for me, if it was a forgotten heroes, it's the beatings, definitely.
Beatings, yeah, another one on our list, definitely. Well, you know, it's the field of genetics we've got as well, Dave. I mean, we kind of avoid them.
You kind of really, Frieda, because, you know, if you think about medicine in Scotland today, genetics, cancer care, biomedical engineering, we're at the forefront of all of these fields. I think Scotland's always been at the forefront of medicine, you know, from the ancient woodland through the Middle Ages, through the Enlightenment to the modern research laboratory. Scots, somehow, we want to heal. We want to share our skills, our medical discoveries. You just think about some of these breakthroughs for a minute. Anesthesia, antiseptics, antibiotics, the treatment of malaria, and even just recently, sophisticated techniques for identifying bacterial meningitis.
Yes.
You know, the history of medicine in Scotland, it's vast and complex. It's not something that I'm an expert on at all, but it's a fascinating subject. It's something that we should all respect and be very proud of. And the next time you're going to use the NHS in any way, just remember that heritage. Respect the heritage and the folk that are dealing with you at the time. We are so fortunate to have it.
Dave, Richie, say much to Bill Prudhoe. Say much to remember that Scotland contributed. If I had a huge machine with a massive group applause for that. Richie, that was just amazing amount of information. And what a treat to hear that, Dave. You've surpassed yourself this time.
Well, it was a fascinating thing for you to ask me to do. And it'll no end here for me. I'll keep reading about it and looking at it and finding out about it.
We can tell.
In fact, I've just got to mention for you, there's a lovely little book that's just been published called The Hebridean Healers, The Beatings of Mull. Oh. And there's several authors behind it. It's a Berlin Press book. And it focuses on that family and it lists a lot of the plants that they used. Anybody that's really interested in this, I would suggest that they have a look for it, definitely.
Great. You're a font of knowledge, just a treasure, an absolute treasure yourself. Okay, time for more music. This is an album called The Piper and the Macker 2, a track featuring one of my favourite smart pipe players, Breeze Campbell, and the track called Tunes in Butterstein Hall.
Thank you.
lovely. And that track is for an album called The Piper and the Macker 2, put together by Finn Moore. And that track is part of that album, but Breeze is about to launch her new album in the summer, and you can hear the first track for that new album, called Bochen Wachen, on YouTube. And it's for her new album about to come out, called Sunwise. Now, you're listening to Scotch Radio, Frieda Morrison here, and with me is Richie Werner and Dave Mitchell. Now, Dave enthused me so much about the history we have on medicine and herbal medicine that I got in contact with a friend of mine that is a renowned medical herbalist. She's also a microtherapist. That's about mushrooms. Now, Natasha Lloyd is about to publish her first book called Foraged Condiments, Wild Plant Recipes for Sauces, Chutneys, Ferments and Drinks. Yay, Richie, Ferments and Drinks. More information about that in a minute. So I joined Natasha out on a path near Ballater and heard more about her book.
So it's an interesting book in that it's got a bit about how to forage and how to use your senses to forage. And it's also about, there's a lot of recipes, I think there's 60 recipes in total.
Wow!
And then a little kind of mini monograph on each plant.
Each plant? No, when you say a monograph, what does that mean?
It's the collection of information put down on one sheet of paper to show you what that plant can do.
So we're going to wander across here. We're on the railway line up in Ballater, in the path. Not the train line, but the path. And you're going to show me how to forage. So where do we start? Show me where. What would you point out for me?
I'm going to point out this one here.
Yeah.
This is ground elder.
Uh-huh.
And it's delicious. It has a celery parsley flavour.
Yeah.
You don't want to take this after it's flowered. It changes.
This is a good time to take it.
It's a very good time to take it when the fresh young leaves first come up.
Uh-huh.
It's really delicious.
So what would you put this into?
I would put this into a pesto. I would add this to a salad. I would make it into a lasagna.
Really?
Yeah. You could just add this to almost anything that you want celery. So a stir fry.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, really tasty. So also has 20 times more vitamin C than a lemon.
Ground elder?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah, it's surprising when you start to look at the nutritional facts. There's a lot of really good nutrition in forage food.
But how did you get started?
In foraging?
Yeah.
With my mum and my grandma to a degree, but mostly my mum. Yeah. When I was quite young, I remember one day getting really annoyed that she was making me weed. But I wasn't annoyed that I was being asked to do a task. I was like, but how do I choose which plant?
Uh-huh.
And we had a copy of Mrs. Greaves' A Modern Herbal, which was written in 1930s. And she would say, go and look it up.
So yeah, you had to look up every time you pulled the weed thinking, should I keep that or not? And that's how you started.
Yeah.
Good for your mum.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nettles here.
Nettles, no, I was going to ask you about nettles. There's a lot to be said about nettles. I've had nettle soup.
That's delicious, huh? Did you find it?
You know this. It was one of the best soups I've tasted. And it was just delicious. But it was just at a certain time of the year, am I right?
Yes. Early on, before it flowers. That's the thing with foraging. There's all these little rules that you have to kind of stick by.
Yeah.
Also to keep sustainability of the plants as well, to make sure you're not over-harvesting. So nettles are full of vitamins and minerals. Absolutely chock full. I would quite often just blasé say it's nature's multivitamin pill.
No. Nettles? Stingy nettles?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Get past the stingy bit. And then they're really good fun. So that has vitamin A, B, C, vitamin K, zinc, selenium, magnesium, manganese, has a huge amount of iron. So this is like your supermarket spinach, but with more iron.
Yeah. I didn't realise that.
Love nettles. This is so good. There's a few others here as well, just as we were looking.
Yeah.
This one here is cleavers.
Cleavers?
Yeah. Also known as Sticky Willy.
Uh-huh.
An easier name to remember. That is got a taste like fresh pea pods.
Yeah.
It's really delicious. And from a medicinal point of view, it's a mild lymphatic. So it moves the lymph around the body and makes it just... So as we're coming out of winter, a spring cleanse is something that was traditionally done. So in winter, we still are quite static. And then after winter, we end up going to pick the young, fresh leaves. So with the ground elder, you're getting your vitamin C.
Yeah.
Also known as gout weed.
Yeah.
And can also pull out...
Back a bit. Gout weed.
Gout weed. So it can help pull out uric acid out of the joints. So if you've had a static winter and you've not been moving as much, taking something like ground elder to help keep the joints moving, the sticky willy to help the lymph when you've been static.
But would you put that in a salad or would you put it in a soup?
I love it in a salad.
Yeah.
There's this new way of doing it where you steep it overnight in some water and then drink the cleaver's water the next morning.
Yeah, right. Now, I'm going to start with my warnings. I should have said about the warnings right at the beginning. But you can't just go out and think you know as much as to pick anything.
Oh, it takes time. It takes a lot of time to really get your eye in. It takes a lot of time to understand your plants. It takes time to understand the environment. And then as you start to... The best way to start to learn is to find one or two plants that you already know. Nettles and dandelion are most people are aware of.
Okay, back a bit. We're into dandelions now.
There's a dandelion here.
No.
We've really not even moved, have we, Frieda?
No.
Yeah, great. So then start looking at what the dandelion is. Mm-hmm. Recognise that. Then what's this plant here? Mm-hmm. And start to look around the other plants. So this one here is Herb Robert.
Herb Robert. Now, what's that for?
I don't use it very much. It's also known as Stinking Bob.
Okay, that's a good name.
Yeah. It's been mentioned a lot in the old Gaelic manuscripts. And when you put science onto it, it actually shows that it brings more oxygen to the cells. So that's quite a serious medicine.
Uh-huh. Now, I'm going to take you back a wee bit here. You talked about the Gaelic books and the Gaelic information. That's important. They've got a huge amount of wisdom contained in the Gaelic lore, isn't there?
Yeah.
Herbal treatments. I suppose because they were so remote, they had to know about this.
Yeah, you didn't have a doctor you could just go to. It was the village herbalist.
Wow. But I could spend hours with you. This is fascinating. But we need to get back into the body of the kirk because I want to kind of look at your book and find out more about what you've got in there. How do folk get hold of it?
Oh, so at the moment it's on pre-sale at Waterstones and Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
And you can buy it directly from the publishers, Aeon Publishers,
A-E-O-N. Yep.
It's not being published until June.
No.
But we're doing a lot of work up to that point to get it there.
You're getting it there. We're looking up the path into the buds just springing open. Any minute now, it's going to be spring. Any minute, and we'll see the new leaves. Look at all the buds there.
Yeah. I love this time of year, that real sense of hope and emergence of all the plants coming through.
That's exactly what it is. It's a real sense of hope. Natasha, thank you for this.
No problem. Pleasure.
Better come back?
Yes.
A whole new world has opened up to me. Just so fascinating. A meander over the parks and roadies will never be the same. Natasha Lloyd, thank you so much for that. And Natasha's new book, Foraged Condiments, is out, as you heard, and soon in the summer, around about June, pre-order available. The publisher was Aeon, A-E-O-N. Fascinating. Dave, Richie, what did you make of that? Just how they moved and all these treasures were there.
I was lovely to hear that interview, Frieda, because it just emphasises what I was talking about. And that pharmacy, Nature's Pharmacy, is still there today. You have to know what you're doing. You have to have a good eye. You have to take your time. You have to read. You have to learn. But when you do that, the wealth that's there is wonderful. And it was lovely to hear nettles being mentioned because that reminded me of Cornish Yarg cheese, which is wrapped in nettle leaves and still sold like that today. And, you know, she mentioned ground elder, which actually was introduced by the Romans. It's not native to the UK. Yeah, just great. Lovely interview. Can't wait to see the book. And I'm quite sure that, you know, people will really enjoy it when it comes out. And it was great, too, to hear Natasha say that you have to think about the sustainability of the plant. You can't just go and pick what you want, where you want. You need to be careful about it.
Mm. It's absolutely fun. And there's a lovely series on BBC ABBA with Mary Ann Kennedy, the foraging series. Try and find that. It's just a lovely, lovely series, T. And can I tell my story about my grandfather? I was telling Natasha about it. Maybe I've told that before. But my grandfather was a poor but honest crofter in the middle of Aberdeenshire near Cummingston in the Moss side of Tucher. And he had an amazing ability to cure animals. In his pipe box, which I remember seeing, in his pipe box, which he kept his flute as well. He was the pipe major of the Tariff Pipe Band, just as a byline. But in his pipe box, there was a whole line of little tinctures, little bottles, that if any went out to the byres or the stables to cure horses, whatever, he would tack his box with the flute in it, and according to legend, he would sit and play his flute in the stable and just wait till the tincture or the medicine that he had just put into the horse or the cattle, whatever, and waited till the medicine worked and just made sure that he observed the animals recovering properly and played his flute at the same time. Isn't that a lovely story?
That's a grand story.
Sadly, I lost that book. I lost the box, and to this day, I wish I had I'd managed to find that box. I just remember seeing it with all the little tinctures inside the box. And so I tell Natasha about this, that herbalism runs in my blood. Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by it. Oh, okay, far have we got till. That's just about the end of this episode. It's been fascinating. Hope you've enjoyed the company and the one around the places and the folk we've met. But before we go, dear, this is the time of year. Folk get into the garden, fetch the jobs with shed bedian. Shed is the word.
Oh, my goodness. Well, if you get your tomatoes sowed, your sweet peppers, your chilies indoor, parsnips outside when the ground warms up, early carrots. If your tatties are not chitting, you should be getting on with that. You should be thinking about other seed sowing for bedding plants. If you want to order young plants and have them delivered rather than growing them on, and grow them on yourself rather than sowing them from seed, you can do that. Get the greenhouse cleaned up, deal your tubers potted up. Busy, busy, busy. No hanging about. Oh, aye, and Richie, mind you and check that lawnmower. It's a good friend.
Don't you worry, sir. All done.
I thought he mentioned, have you scrubbed your lawnmower? Have you
it's a good friend. You treat it with respect.
It like, but it's clean.
Put some grease round the moving parts, you can.
Don't you worry.
Oh, as if we had all the time in the world to polish the blazer with my head. And as I've often said, my garden is big and includes parks, and this year includes hunters of mouldy heaps, and I'm nailing. Hunters. There's a mouldy epidemic here in the northeast again. You're not taking this serious enough. It's a big problem. But fit-divy-dee.
You've just got to live with it. What you need to do is get that machine of yours and go and run and gather up all the soil off the mouldy heaps, get it through a riddle and use it to mark your rain compost.
There's hunters of heaps.
And keep you busy, burn off the calories, keep you fit. That's the way
I need someone to keep me busy.
I feel sorry for the wee Maudie. He's coming to the surface because the ground's too warm. He's oh God, I've got to get up here. There's not enough cold weather. Hide down a low.
But why is there so many? Is it because there hasn't been a deep enough frost this year?
I don't know, Frida. I think they're just active, you know? Live and let live. But the one thing, you're right, I mean, it can damage moors and equipment, so you've got to be careful.
Well, it throws up steens, and the steens break the blades of the moors that cut the hay. Knee digging.
I mean, when I was young, my dad used to say, the mowdies are up, come on, boy, we'll get half a dozen bags, we're away to the field, and I kent what was coming. You had to bag it all up, and then you had to go and hame and riddle it, and they got that lovely loam that you get out of it. Mm. We used to mix it with leaf mould and a wee bit of... another story for another day. Makes things ground meal.
On behalf of Richie, Dave and myself, enjoy your spring. Keep weel and warm and join us again. We finish with this track for Session A9 and a track with tunes called Rachel's Graduation Day and the Tenor Reel. Say me, Frieda Morrison and Richie Werner in the wheelhouse and Dave Mitchell. Enjoy your space. Bye.